Well, all right. Hi again, everybody, and welcome back aboard our local hour here on my favorite two radio stations in the entire nation. Of course, 1450 AM KBFI and always beautiful Bonner's Ferry, 1400 AM KSPT right here in somewhat sunny Sandpoint in a kind of a mild summery day today. It's kind of refreshing these days that are 80, 82 degrees after we reached 104 a week or so ago. That was ridiculous. My garden did not like, well, the garden liked the hot weather. My flowers did not like the hot weather. Some of them still haven't forgiven me. Anyway, warming up again a little bit. That rain yesterday was awesome. Just awesome. And today about high of 80, and then we're warming up again to the low 90s, 90-ish, 89, 90, for the foreseeable future. It looks right through next week. So look forward to that. It's summertime here in North Idaho, and it's North Idaho Thursday today. I want to thank Barbara McLongstreet for joining us yesterday for Ricky's Top 10. That was a lot of fun. We've got another good one for you today. First up, we'll be chatting with Bonner General Health Emergency Nurse Dennis Simcoe. Dennis will be sharing summer safety tips and advice on when to go to immediate care versus the emergency department at BGH. That's an excellent question. And they just move immediate care into town, too. So we'll talk about that. Really looking forward to meeting Dennis. Then in our second segment, we'll welcome back in the folks from Suzuki String Academy. They were here just a couple weeks ago, but they have some special events coming up for the rest of this summer. And in our final segment, we'll be chatting with local author Paul Cox. Been trying to get him on the show for a while, and our schedules just have not meshed until today. I'm glad it's finally going to work out, and I'm really looking forward to chatting with Paul. So that'll be coming up here in just a bit. Coming up here in just a week from today, the festival at Sandpoint. It's back. And I think we start the protective decking under the stage and stuff. I think that starts going in tomorrow. So it's festival time. St. Paul and the Broken Bones a week from today, Thursday. And you can see the entire lineup and buy tickets and find out about other changes that are going on with the festival. Because honestly, just about everything has changed. It's been that kind of a pandemic that we got through and other things. And so it's just so exciting that it's back. Go to festival@sandpoint.com and find out more. If you want to find some free music today, it's happening in Farman Park. KPND and K102 present Maddox Farms productions of the Sandpoint Summer Music Series in downtown Sandpoint. Farman Park today at doors open. Well, doors. It's like a little plastic fence. Opens at 6. Music at 6:30. Heels to the Hardwood. Great fun for the entire family. It's absolutely free. I believe there's beer and wine for purchase, and it's just a fun thing to do. It's a perfect evening for a free concert downtown, brought to you by, like I said, our radio stations, Washington Trust Bank, The Reader, and POAC. So hopefully we'll see you guys down there this evening. What else is going on? Let's see. Already mentioned that Matchwood Brewing has music tonight as well. It starts at about 7, and it's We Be Jammin'. We're at matchwoodbrewing.com, so check that out. Farmers Market is this Saturday in Farman Park. Park's a busy park. It's happening every Saturday from 9 until 1, and also Saturday the 219, which is located at 219 North 1st Avenue, hosts live music from 9 o'clock till midnight with Crooked Tooth, a local band, which is very, very entertaining. So looking forward to that. Also looking forward to today's show. We'll have our Bonner General Health segment to kick it off. Suzuki String Academy is here. And then our final segment, we'll finally meet author Paul Cox. So if I were you, I'd stick around.
Welcome back to the Raptors. I'm Roy, he's Stan, we're from Triple Play over in North Idaho.
Hey, I have some news. I got my new phone today.
Wouldn't that be breaking news.
Okay, funny guy. Not bad, Roy, not bad.
Seriously, how many phones have you broken at this point?
You know, 3 or 4 dozen or so.
How does one dinosaur break that many phones?
Accidentally kicking it into the wave pool, losing it in the dark on XD Dark Ride, watching it tumble into the water at mini golf, unintentionally crushing it while bowling.
I'd say I can't believe it, but I can. I totally can.
Do you have pockets? I don't either.
The Raptors are brought to you by Triple Play, where you can race go-karts, play laser tag, climb a ropes course, and splash around in Raptor Reef Indoor Water Park. Plus, it's all attached to a cozy hotel. Visit 3play.com.
I gotta show you this funny picture of my phone!
And score another for the wave pool.
ADHD. It's the child who can't pay attention or sit still in school, right? The answer, maybe yes. Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, or ADHD, can be complicated and it can last a lifetime. Living with a condition can sometimes be a challenge. It may take years to accept a formal diagnosis, and it's not always easy to find the right treatment plan. Did you know that up to 75% of children and adolescents with ADHD have at least one additional mental health condition that also requires a comprehensive approach to treatment? ADHD guidelines were recently updated to reflect the need to screen for associated disorders. Be sure to talk with your child's doctor about proper screening and visit moretoadhd.com for additional information. That's moretoadhd.com. This message has been brought to you in partnership with ADA, ACO, and CHAD.
Here is Jim Zuberbühler, the race director of the Longbridge Swim, to tell us about this year's event.
The Longbridge Swim is the single best spectator swim and one of the largest open water swims in the Pacific Northwest. People come from all over the country and the world to participate. There's still time to register for this year's swim, and swimmers must register online at longbridgeswim.org by Thursday, August 5th, or at Sandpoint High School on Friday, August 6th. There's no same-day registration on August 7th. I'd like to thank our many sponsors. Our swim lessons program would not be successful without their generous support. The Longbridge Swim provided swim lessons and water safety classes for over 8,000 kids over the past 10 years, supported the City Beach Lifeguard Training Program, and included lessons for special education students. Come out and swim or watch from the Longbridge on Saturday, August 7th.
Jim Zuberbühler is a financial advisor with D.A. Davidson & Company in Sandpoint. In addition to providing financial advice and service, employees volunteer their time and resources to local causes, such as the Longbridge Swim.
North Idaho's Radio, 97.1 FM and 1450 and 1400 AM.
All right, we are back on the aforementioned radio stations. I'm Bob Witte along with you. It is North Idaho Thursday, and we kick it off today with our almost weekly Bonner General Health segment. And joining us today from the emergency department, Dennis Simcoe. Dennis, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Bob. Appreciate
and
you.
You were just telling me you've been at BGH for 23 years.
Yep, that's right. Moved from North Carolina and started in the ER, and I've been there ever since.
That's great. So did you come out here for the job?
Yeah, we wanted to be at a place that had a little more winter and skiing, and my wife had family here, so it was a perfect match for us.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's fairly common around here. Yeah, that's how I ended up here.
Uh-huh.
There was family here. So, well, welcome to the show. It's great having you here. I know you're a nurse, but what is your like day in, day out function at BGH?
Yeah, I'm one of the ER nurses. I'm a charge nurse there. So we do anything from triaging patients, sorting to see what kind of acuity or how sick they are. And we take care of them, you know, take care of any kind of traumas or heart problems or strokes or anything that kind of comes our way in the ER. Yeah.
I bet you've seen some pretty gnarly stuff over the years.
Yep. Seen some things. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know how you guys do that, but hats off to you. So now immediate care, which I believe has been out by Triangle Drive and Pondere for a number of years.
Correct.
You just moved that location.
Yeah, they're moved onto our main campus now, and they're right next door to the ER. So sometimes people looking for immediate care have difficulty, and we put a big sign out on the wall there. So kind of if you're looking at our emergency area where the big sky bridge is that goes over the road, that's where the entrance to immediate care is. And they've been there 4 to 6 weeks, I think.
So it's in the same building?
The same building, yes.
Not the new building?
Not the new health services building. It's in the original hospital building.
So what I need to know is what's the different – I always pictured, you know, the immediate care out in Pend'Oreille was for people in that neighborhood if they had an emergency. Is there a – am I wrong about that or – what is its purpose?
Well, they have a little bit of a different scope than the emergency department. Of course, the emergency department, we're dealing with heart attacks, strokes, respiratory difficulties, and those are the kind of traumas. Those are the kind of things that we mostly specify in. So in the immediate care, they will deal with any kind of respiratory illness, fevers, your common cold, broken bones, simple fractures, we call them, lacerations or cuts that you need stitches for, all kinds of things like that. You can get COVID tests there. So they deal with a lot of things that aren't really life-threatening.
Gotcha. So and before immediate care moved into the BGH campus, and if you needed stitches or bleeding really bad or you had just broken your arm, you would – in the past have gone to the emergency room and you would have taken care of it.
Yeah, yes. And some of those things that they would come to the emergency department for actually probably can be taken care of at immediate care. If it's an arm or a leg and not really deformed a lot, a simple fracture we call it, they can take care of that at immediate care. Right now they have all our lab testing and radiology services available now, so they do a lot of that there.
So how does one decide which one to go to? Say your son just fell down and broke his arm. It's like,
yeah, good question.
Which door do I go in?
Yeah, and it's always scary for parents or guardians when you come across that situation. So, you know, take a minute, take a breath, count to 10 and say, you know, is this – a life-threatening injury for my child or loved one? And if it's not life-threatening, you know, try immediate care. They're open from, I think, Monday through Friday, 9 to 7, and on the weekends, 10 to 6. So they can come there. And for life-threatening things or if they have questions, they can simply call, you know, is this appropriate for immediate care or for the ER?
And the ER is always there.
Yes, we never close.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm supposed to ask you about summer safety tips. What did you want to pass along?
Okay, well, I want to pass along a couple. We have a board. I don't know if people have been to the ER. You've probably seen our statistics board. We have a winter board, and we have a summer board.
Okay.
So our summer board, we got the top ones on our summer board are boating water sports, people getting injured doing that. Then we're all tied with ATVs, motorcycles, and bicycle crashes. And then we go to what we call balls gone bad, which is just simple sprains and scrapes and things like that. And bees are a big thing right now. So.
Yeah, they are. This is the worst year, well, for yellow jackets around. Like almost every evening I go out to water, they're just like all around me. I go, why are you guys so angry? Just leave me alone.
They're very angry and very thirsty.
Yeah.
And get kind of aggressive. So one thing, a lot of people get a little bit freaked out when they get stung. So usually, if you get stung, it's appropriate to take some Benadryl.
Okay.
One or two tablets of Benadryl if you're an adult. And go ahead and put ice on that area. And if you should have any problem breathing, any respiratory problems, that's when you want to come to the emergency department.
Gotcha.
And it's more the ER than immediate care. So that's when we want to see you there. ATVs, bicycles, things like that. One thing we really stress on people is to have a helmet. Mm-hmm. That's can just prevent a lot of injuries with significant head injuries if you have a helmet. And with our water safety things, make sure you have a life jacket and make sure you go with a buddy.
Absolutely.
So those are things that we want to pass on to people. And if you have questions about any of that and these hot weather, stay hydrated. A lot of people say I'm dehydrated and got to go to the ER to get IV fluids, but the best way to hydrate is just to drink. So, and if you can drink, that's how we're going to do it. We're going to have you just drink fluids, and if you can't, we'll put IVs in you and give you fluids that way.
And if it's a particularly hot day like we have been experiencing this year, if you wait until you're thirsty, like say you're hiking or playing golf, and you wait until you're really thirsty to start drinking water, it's too late.
Yeah.
You needed to do that beforehand and maybe even a Gatorade or a Powerade before you go for that hike just to get your just stay hydrated and then just maintain it with water. So
yeah, prehydrate. That's important.
That's good. You mentioned the yellow jacket stings. I had one recently right above my knee, and I immediately put on some baking soda. And I don't know how or whatever you probably do, but it took away the sting like almost immediately, like within a couple of minutes. But it did swell a bit and it turned really red. Now, is that an allergic reaction or is that just from the poison? Or how do you know when you're actually allergic to this stuff?
Yeah, usually that's called a localized reaction. So it's just in one local area. Mm-hmm. And it may go through, you know, your whole leg if you got stung on the thigh. But we're concerned more about the systemic one that goes throughout your whole body. Your throat closes up. It's hard to breathe. So, you know, if you should have any symptoms of hard to breathe, difficulty catching your breath, that's when we want to see you. And that's when people who have had reactions before would use their EpiPen. But yeah. If it's just a local reaction, you don't have to worry about it. Baking soda works for a lot of people. Put some ice on it. Benadryl. Those are all good things.
And there are some products available, like at Superdrug, that you can get that you just put on a bee sting immediately. And those products, so if you're a golfer or a hiker or whatever, then during these summer months, especially this particular year, or you're out huckleberry picking, for example, it's good to have something along with you just to help with that immediate pain.
Yeah, that sting relief stuff is great stuff, yeah.
You mentioned water sport injuries. I'm trying to imagine, how do people get injured doing water sports?
Yeah, well, a lot of it has to do with boating or being pulled by a boat at a fast rate of speed and then hitting the water hard or getting cut by the prop happens sometimes. So those are a little gnarlier. But those all can happen, you know, falling out of your canoe or your kayak and hitting your head or being swept down the river. So those are all things that you just make sure you kind of know what you're doing and you're with people and have a life jacket on.
Yeah, life jacket's very, very, very important. And, you know, for people who do the surfing thing, which has become so big, you know, or the traditional water skiing, and when the person goes down, you got to put up that flag because, especially on weekend summer days around here, it could get a little trafficky around the more popular areas. So that's very important. And it's the law. So.
Yeah. Let people know you're there. Yeah.
So anything else you wanted to tell us about the new immediate care? Or actually, that's the question is, why did you move from the old location into the BGH building?
Well, I'm not sure of the specific reason. I know one of the things is it's nice to have that area consolidated. So now that they're in our hospital, we can get x-rays quicker. We can do labs. They don't have to be transferred from a distant location to our main area. And then if there's someone that goes to immediate care because they're having chest pain, we're right there at the emergency department to bring them over there. So it's a little more efficient there.
Very good point.
And it's nice to have their staff here and get to know them and everything.
Yeah, we're talking to Dennis Simcoe. He's a nurse with the emergency department at Bonner General Health. And I know you need to get – you've got your scrubs on. You need to get back to work. But I appreciate you taking the time out of your day to come join us.
Yeah, well, thanks a lot for having us. And everyone out there, have a safe summer and stay cool.
All right. We'll do it again sometime, Dennis. And we are going to take our second break. When we come back, we got the folks from the Suzuki String Academy with us once again, and we'll find out what's going on there this summer right after this.
Summer is in full swing at the Pondere Winery, and July marks the month huckleberries begin coming into season in the mountains. So naturally, we've decided to make our popular Huckleberry Blush Wine of the Month. Come enjoy a glass while taking in beautiful works of art by Dan Carpenter and Denise Knight on display for Art Walk. Our kitchen continues to turn out incredibly tasty cuisine that complements all of our award-winning wines. We're open Tuesday through Sunday, 12 to 8, so come into 301 Cedar in downtown Sandpoint and treat yourself to an experience unlike any other at the Pondere Winery.
I'm Neil, and I approve this message.
Wait, what?
My fellow Americans, Neil here from Auto Credit Sales, and I think it's high time we had something to celebrate.
Please stop.
So, I'm taking matters into my own hands to help relieve stress and start having fun again.
All right, that's enough.
Sorry, my bad. Hey, it's time to let freedom ride. So the first 188 people who qualify can break free from their old ride and declare independence in a nicer, newer car for just $7 down. So keep your cash and start having fun in a nicer, newer car for just $7 down. But hurry, this celebration ends once we help the 188 people break free from their old ride. I'm Neil, your dealer for the people. See all the cars at autocreditsales.com.
Credit and $7 that requires bank approval. Negative equity may be finance offer absolutely expires on July 31st, 2021, and at least it's not an election year.
At least I can form a sentence.
At the co-op, we know it's pretty darn warm outside. We also know it isn't going to stay that way. So if you use energy logs or wood pellets, now is the time to give the co-op a call. The co-op is offering free delivery on energy logs and pellets through July and August. Free delivery is good for within 25 miles of the store. A $2 per mile charge applies thereafter. If you use propane in your home or office, now is also a great time to check into Co-op's propane products and services. If you aren't happy with your current propane provider, give Amy a call at 208-263-3338 and find out how easy it is to switch to Co-op propane. The inevitable chilly days of winter still lie ahead, so now is the time to let the Co-op help you get ready for them. Co-op Gas and Supply Company, 125 Tibbetts Lane in Ponderay, 208-263-6820.
Since Woods Hay and Grain opened their doors in 2013, they continue to provide quality livestock feed for the community. Simple and locally grown ingredients has customers coming back for more while creating new feeds like their rabbit grower pellet and maintainer pellet. Whether you ferment, use loose grains, pellets, or crumbles, Woods Hay and Grain has something for your livestock. Visit them online or stop by their feed store just 5 miles north of Ponderay on Highway 95.
KBFI, KSPT, North Idaho's radio.
All right, we are back here in North Idaho Thursday. I'm Bob Witte. Along with you, we have author Paul Cox coming up with us in just a couple of moments. Really looking forward to that. Right now, we are joined from the Suzuki String Academy, Bianca Barbo?
Prado.
Close enough for me.
Yes.
You are from Brazil, and how did you end up in Sandpoint?
Oh, yeah. So I'm from Brazil. 3 years ago, I moved to Illinois to study my master's at Illinois State University in cello performance and string pedagogy. And then when I was about to graduate, I started looking for jobs, and there was a job listing for the Suzuki String Academy here. They were looking for a cello teacher to start developing their cello program. That is a new program that I just started in January.
Okay.
I have so far 20 students, which is amazing for just a few months. And I'm very grateful for all the wonderful environment Sandpoint is for culture and how many people want to learn to play the cello here.
And so you came here in January, but you've probably heard it was the easiest winter of all time.
I've heard about that. I thought it was amazing. But I had a really bad winter on my first year in Illinois.
Yeah.
So I hope I will survive next one.
So you guys have a summer string academy going on, and tell us about that.
Yeah, so we are in August from 19th to the 20th. We're hosting the first ever Sandpoint Strings Festival, Sandpoint Summer Strings Festival. We're having some guest conductors, a guest conductor coming from Spokane. She also used to direct a lot of camps in Alaska, so she'll be here to conduct our orchestra. It will be like 3 days of a great orchestral experience for our young string players. And we will have a concert at the fair as the final performance on Saturday, the 21st, at 4 p.m.
So the final day of the Bonner County Fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Looking forward
wonderful.
To that.
We're very excited about that.
I'm very excited about the fair coming back and all.
Right.
So you have also your own recital coming up?
Yes. So next Wednesday, July 28th at 7 p.m., mm-hmm. I will be performing at the Heartwood Center with my friend and colleague at the Suzuki String Academy, Simon Pranaitis. So we're going to, I call that recital Songs of Joy and Hope. And we'll be performing some of my favorite songs for cello and piano.
That's great. So what time at the Heartwood Center next Wednesday?
7 o'clock.
Wednesday. Yeah, 7 p.m. I'm writing this down on my calendar.
Yeah, I chose some of my favorite pieces for cello and piano. They are all like short pieces, like real songs. There's one that's actually called Song Without Words. So I decided to bring this kind of really beautiful repertoire that is not like something that will be demanding to the audience, like a 40-minute whole sonata. So they are all really beautiful short pieces, but that I hope to bring like lots of joy and hope for the people that are listening to that.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful. So how long of a performance do you expect this to be?
Not more than 40 minutes. We'll have around 30 minutes of music, 6, 7 pieces total. And we're going to be talking about the pieces between them, so people have a context about how it was when it was composed, or the inspiration of the composers at that point, so that people really can feel everything that comes with that music.
Mm-hmm. And so looking forward to that. That's next Wednesday, 7 o'clock at the Heartwood Center, formerly St. Joseph's Catholic Church a long time ago. And is that a fundraiser for the String Academy?
Yes, it's a fundraiser for myself, actually, because I came here to work, and we knew I had this visa for one year. So I started in January. So I have this visa valid to next January. And then now, so I can stay here and keep teaching my students, because next semester, also in the fall, I'm going to start teaching some students of the prep division of the University of Idaho in Moscow. Okay. I'm actually teaching them online, so from here. And it's so wonderful that there's so many... there's a need for a cello teacher around here, so I'm very pleased to be living here and have this opportunity to teach so many wonderful students. So one of my students of the Vivace Cello Ensemble, that was one of my passions here, that I decided to create this cello ensemble for adult, beginner and intermediate players. And they are a wonderful group of 10 cellists right now. So one of my students there, Jamie Davis, created this GoFundMe for me to start raising funds for my visa application. It takes a lot of money for the attorney fees.
Oh, gotcha.
And then also I've been working hard the last semester, because that's an artist visa. To get that, you have to prove you're really influent in your job. So I had articles published in magazines and journals about music, one in the Suzuki journal in November that will be published. So I'm very happy about that. And then I have to have performances to prove that I am an artist and I have something to do here to stay 3 more years at least.
Well, you'll have this radio interview, and it's archived on NorthIdahoRadio.com. So you can just play that for them.
Yeah.
they'll just give you the visa.
Okay. I think so. Yeah. So every opportunity of performing here, it's really great. And of course, all the proceeds of this recital are going towards my visa too.
Yeah, to pay for the attorneys and all of that.
So I hope people can come listen to beautiful music and help me staying here.
Yeah, I think it's going to come through. You have nothing to worry about. If anybody wants to learn more about Suzuki String Academy, and maybe they're new to town, or they just want to get their grandchild or children interested in music, how do you find out, and where are you guys located?
So we are located here in downtown, but we're going to move to a new space in the fall, because, you know, 20 cellos is a lot of cellos, and we need a lot of space for that. So we're very thankful that our program is growing so fast. So we're moving to a new building at the Baldy Mountain Road.
Baldy Mountain Road?
Yeah. For the fall. We'll have an open house.
Baldy and Division on that corner?
I
knew there was some space available.
Yeah,
there.
So it's a whole, so we'll have a whole building just for the school, which is wonderful.
That's great.
And then hopefully we can have even more instructors and more students. You can always go to our website, where we always keep all the information about our upcoming programs for the fall. We have early childhood music for kids all ages, and violin, cello, and piano lessons so far. And our website is www.suzukistringacademy.com.
I love the way you said www.
Yeah, that was a hard one to say.
Suzukistringacademy.com. It's like saying, you know, when you say the www, it's like saying, and our 800 number is 800. I was like, why do you do that? Suzukistringacademy.com. And again, if you want to see Bianca perform with a fellow teacher, it's next Wednesday, 7 o'clock at the Heartwood Center. How much are tickets?
$20 for $20. General attendance.
So it's great, and they'll be talking in between the pieces to explain what's going on, and you can ask questions and things like that.
Exactly.
Always a pleasure to have you here. We'll do it again sometime after you get your visa.
Yes. Thank you so much. I would love that.
All right. We are going to take our final break. When we come back, a local author, Paul Cox, is with us. And even if you are not familiar with his books, I think you should stay tuned. You're going to be very interested to hear this and pick up a couple of his books. So stick around.
Have you visited Grünberg Schloss Collector's Cabinet lately? They have preparedness and homesteading books and supplies, emergency rations, food storage supplies, and they now stock ammo and knives as well. Of course, Grünberg Schloss carries U.S. and world coins and paper money, gold and silver, bullion, jewelry, and more. Open Monday through Friday from 10 to 5 on Triangle Drive just south of the Kootenai Cutoff Road in Ponderay. Call 208-263-6060. Grünberg Schloss Collector's Cabinet, 263-6060.
When life throws you a curveball, your P1FCU debit account can help keep you moving. P1FCU Perks, powered by Bezing, offers great features like money-saving discounts, cell phone protection, roadside assistance, and cash back. This card saves you money. Does your debit card do that? P1FCU, a Pacific Northwest original since 1938. Only available with P1FCU preferred debit accounts. Insured by NCUA.
Hello, this is Nevin Neal, pastor of Bonners Ferry Baptist Church, and I'd like for you to think about this question. Does man obtain righteousness? Does he obtain eternal life as a result of the work that he does for God, or as a result of the work that God does within him? 1 Corinthians 6, 9-11 says, "Know ye not that the unrighteous shall not inherit the kingdom of God? Be not deceived, neither fornicators, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, nor effeminate, nor abusers of themselves with mankind, nor thieves, nor covetous, nor drunkards, nor revilers, nor extortioners shall inherit the kingdom of God. And such were some of you. But ye are washed, but ye are sanctified, but ye are justified in the name of the Lord Jesus, and by the Spirit of our God." Titus 3, 5, and 6 says, "Not by works of righteousness which we have done, but according to his mercy he saved us by the washing of regeneration and renewing of the Holy Ghost, which he shed on us abundantly through Jesus Christ our Savior." Perhaps you'd like to contact us. You can reach us at 267-3746.
Everyone has something they've dreamed about doing but never quite had the time or money to make happen. Like skydiving naked, becoming a butterfly therapist, or an Olympic breakdancer. Well, now with the life-changing $200,000 carefree cash payday at Northern Quest, you could live that dream. Or just pay down the mortgage. Either way, I know what I'd do. Hit it, Gary. See details at northernquest.com. We've all had something we dreamed about doing but never quite had the time to accomplish. Like competitive duck herding, human puppeteering, or exotic balloon animal art. Well, now with Northern Quest's life-changing $200,000 carefree cash payday, you can live just about any dream you dream up. Or finally move out of your mom's basement. That's your call. But I know what I'd do. Come on, fellas, let's beat it. See details at northernquest.com.
North Idaho's radio, KSPT and KBFI.
All right, we are back. Our final segment here on North Idaho Thursday, and our guest right now is Dr. Paul Cox, a local dentist here in the Sandpoint area, and also an author of, I'm assuming, mostly Western-themed novels, and I've read one of them. I will read them all, and I really, really enjoyed this, and gosh, when was that? A year or so ago, I was talking about, well, that was in the winter of not last year, but the year before, that I'd mentioned on the air that I was all out of books because I'm an avid reader in the wintertime, and you showed up and gave me this book, and I loved it.
It's just about when COVID hit really hard and everything shut down. The libraries were shut down, and you couldn't even get in. And
couldn't go to the stores.
Most of those books go to libraries around the world. So I thought, well, I'll just bring one. I happened to have one in the car, and I brought it by and dropped it off. So
yeah,
couldn't hurt.
So you were from Northeast Arkansas. Grew up, working outside with your parents and picking cotton and things like that. And it said in your bio you had a friend and neighbor named Johnny Cash. Is that the Johnny Cash?
Yeah, my parents grew up with Johnny Cash. My mother and the Cash family went to church together, first on a wagon before the war, and then in a car. Somehow they all fit together. And when and my father lived across the road from the Cashes and used to pilfer watermelons from their watermelon farm. So, but they called him J.R., at that time. And when Jack died, my mother sang at his funeral.
Wow.
And I remember they were so poor, all she had was a white dress. And she apologized to Mrs. Cash, saying, "I'm sorry I had to wear that dress, the only one I got." She said, "It's okay, you remind me of an angel." So just a hard life they had.
Yeah.
You know, and that I grew up about 9 miles away from Dice, Arkansas, which is where all that happened. So moved far, far away.
Yeah, you did. You moved out to California because your dad just was believed in progress and knew that that was the place to be at the time. And, of course, being a doctor, you're obviously a great student, but you're also a great college track and field athlete at Cal State Fullerton, and which has a great baseball program lately, by the way.
Mainly baseball. I think Kevin Costner played there.
Yeah. Yeah. And you were All-American in track at Fullerton.
At the college Division II.
Yeah.
I went to the Nationals at that time. I'd just fallen in the pole vault about 14 feet, and I had to go on a cane, but I still managed to place high enough. But it was kind of disappointing to end my career with an injury like that.
And you have some Native American Cherokee ancestry through
right.
your mother's side. Was Jim Thorpe a hero for you growing up?
He was, but I think mainly from the movie with mm-hmm. Burt Lancaster.
Yeah.
But yeah, I
grew up watching that same movie.
Yeah, I did enjoy that. And in fact, I just finished a manuscript that has to do with the Carlisle Indian School. Some things I didn't know about 1896 and how they had the Indians there and made a story out of that. So, you know, kind of interesting to study the heritage. But we were from what my mother's called Melungeon tribe. It was a kind of a loose-knit tribe in Tennessee that was basically triracial. So most people don't know about that. But their maiden name was Hall. That's one of the big names of that group. So
then you moved up to Northern California and the University of San Francisco. A great school, by the way. And you went to dental school. And how did you end up in Sandpoint from there?
I went from there to Vacaville, California. And unfortunately, about five of my colleagues went to the same town. So it was kind of rough setting up at that time. But it was just a good kind of a rural, semi-rural area mm-hmm. at the time. It was about 30,000. Now I think it's about 150,000 people.
Yeah, just like everywhere in California.
Right, right. But I liked pheasant hunting and that sort of thing. They had a lot of rice fields out there and duck fields, so we went out there and lived there for a while. And then decided to move up the road to and start a second practice in a real small town, smaller than Clarkport. So I had two offices at the same time just to kind of make ends meet.
And provide dental services to an otherwise small town that didn't have any. How did that all lead to Sandpoint area?
Well, the area got a little bit rough. We had, at the time, everybody's heard of MS-13. Well, there was a 14, and at the time, MS-13 and 14 were kind of dueling it out around the Sacramento area, and I didn't want to raise my kids in that environment. Mm. We came up here to visit, who actually was a retired law enforcement officer out of Sacramento and never heard of Sandpoint, and of course, we crossed that bridge. Mm-hmm. And that was the end of it. So we decided.
Everybody's story.
Well, actually, I saw something that shocked me when we came through town. There was a teenage girl hitchhiking. And I thought, where in the world are we that somebody can do that and not be afraid for their life? And I thought, this is kind of where I grew up, you know, in the rural South. Mm-hmm. It was very safe. I'm going to bring my kids up here. So that's how we came up. We had no plans to do it. And then we came up and said, this is where we want to be.
And you're practicing dentistry ever since here in Sandpoint. And are you still active with the?
Right. I talked to an elite dentist in Florida a few years ago, and he told me how he set up his practice. And I patterned that mine that way, where I have the hygienist come in a different day, and I'm on 3 days a week, and we work that way for 5 days out in Ponderay. But kind of a country laid-back practice. I can't get away from my roots.
Yeah. And you do ranching?
I have 20 acres, and I have horses, and I a few cows to make sure we keep the tax exemption out there. But I have a feeling the taxes are going to go up now. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's great, and you've been here for quite a while. And what maybe some of even your patients don't know is that you write Western novels. And how did you get into that, or is that just something that was started as a hobby, and then you?
Well, when I kind of had to give up my athletic career, it was kind of a shock to the system. So to keep my mind occupied, I read every one of Louis L'Amour's books that he had within a year. And then I kind of thought about that for a while. And then I just decided I think I'll write my own, and eventually got into that. And been writing basically for the last 20 years or so. And this one here, Destiny, was the first one that was traditionally published. I didn't realize I was writing Western historical westerns until somebody told me. So I submitted it to a publisher, and they said, yeah, that's what it is. We'll take it. And they said, we want you to write a trilogy. And I said, I don't even know how to write a sequel, much less a trilogy. So Black Sun, the one that just came out, is the sequel, and they just bought Guadalupe Canyon, which is the third in the trilogy, and that should come out this spring. So they went for it, even though these are not cowboy westerns, which you can tell when reading Destiny, since that time period was 1915. But they accepted my kind of strange way of writing and the endings. But there are very few cowboys in there. There's Indians in there, but not your traditional western.
Yeah, a lot of it takes place south of the border.
Right.
And, I really enjoyed Destiny. And not only does it takes place south of the border, but it has ties to our area here. Is that a theme in your books?
Well, I started out, it was hard to do history research in Sandpoint because there weren't a lot of records kept in the early time period. But Sandpoint, I found out, was a wide open, really rough town up until about 1910.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish I could remember where I found it, but there was a record of a hanging bee where they hung six people in one day in Sandpoint. So it was wide open with the loggers and the railroad people, but it got fairly sophisticated by 1910. But we did, when Pancho Villa invaded Columbus back in 1915, there was a little bit of a delay, but Sandpoint did send a company down to the border along with 150,000 other National Guard troops, and they were there. So that's part of that Destiny story, but it was called Company A, and they got quite a few compliments on how neat their camp was and this and that, but Sandpoint was involved in that.
Yeah, it's very interesting. So if you like to read the historical, semi-wet, 1915, like you said, which I love. I'm intrigued with that period because, you know about the cowboy days and all of that. But that era right there was like the in-between modernization and the cowboy era, but it was still, things were still pretty funky. Like the people in this story thought that their automobiles were the latest thing at the time, but it's like, that is so hard, especially when it gets so rural in the story. You're thinking, how are they going to get gas? Where do they get their water? They're in the Mexican desert. So it's really interesting.
Right. Black Jack Pershing rode across. He was like in his 60s, which is pretty old for that day and age in the cavalry. He rode across into Mexico on horseback. But then he switched to a car for the rest of the time he was in Mexico. But still, to think, and then the first airplanes, and they couldn't fly high enough, and they kept crashing. But it is interesting to see that overlap between airplanes, cars, and horseback, and the whole thing. And that's why I like that time period, because it's so strange to think they're riding horses and cars at the same time, kind of like Roy Rogers days.
Yeah, it's great stuff. So Destiny, that's the one I read, but you've written several novels before this?
This is, the Guadalupe Canyon will be the ninth, but those were basically what you call print-on-demand or self-published, because my first novel I sent out and my ego was kind of brittle, so when they got rejections, I just gave up sending them off for the next several years.
You can't do that and be an author.
I know, but then finally I just accidentally fell into this historical fiction and sent it in, and they said, well, in fact, the editor said, this is almost literature. I think that was a compliment. I'm not sure, but I'm not sure what she meant, but I was kind of surprised they took them and took them so quickly.
Yeah. So do you write year-round, or do you save that for the
snow? I do research. It takes me about a year of research before I can begin a novel, and then I write all winter, which makes the winters really useful up here because there's very little to do, and it gets dark at 4 o'clock. So, but I've been five times to the border in the last 6 years.
I was going to say, you just brushed over the word, I do my research, but you actually go to the places where the story is going to take place.
Yeah, Guadalupe Canyon is a really unique place. In fact, I just went down there last month because I wanted to see where the wall stopped or what happened to the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And like the wall or not, it's to me, it's like the eighth wonder of the world. It's amazing to see what they did. I was there 2 years ago, and there was nothing except they were bringing in the steel, and then I went back this time. Well, they stopped right at the canyon, I think, due to the politics. But the canyon has a lot of history of murders and Apache passes and rustling there. So I'm kind of glad they didn't go in there. But when you're in there, you're alone, and the border is a few feet away, and there's nothing but a white marker every mile that looks like 6 feet tall. So you don't know unless you have a GPS system if you're in Mexico or not. And I walked into one old abandoned ranch house and had Sinaloa written on the wall. And I thought, this is, you know, that's the cartel name. So I thought, this is about as far as I'm going to go.
Yeah.
So I went and went back. But I didn't see a soul.
It's still scary. I mean, I was pretty scared of it in the book.
It is extremely uneasy when you're in there because you're looking over your shoulder and you're by, I'm 10 miles into the middle of nowhere. And I took a bicycle for the first 7 or 8. Then I had to stop and walk up a ridge towards Mexico. And I'm thinking, I'd look in my GPS system thinking, where am I? Where am I? And finally I had a orange hat. So I put that on. I thought, well, if they see the orange, they realize I'm not trying to sneak up on them. Mm-hmm. I'm not Border Patrol and maybe they won't shoot me. So, you keep an eye out for tracks and you listen for sounds and you just cross your fingers and hope you're going to be okay. But I enjoy it,
though. Yeah. I mean, you should write articles about your adventures doing research for the books.
Well, I'd like it when I get out of there. When I'm down there, I can't explain what that feels like. Kind of the hair on the back of your neck is constantly up, and you can almost feel the dead people that have been murdered through there over the last 150 years or so. I mean, old man Clanton was killed in there from, if you remember the Tombstone story, mm-hmm. the father was killed in there, and several sheriffs have been killed in there, and the last cavalry attack on the Apaches occurred in there in 1896 or so. So it's full of history, but it's still... That whole country is almost untouched. That's why I like it, because it's kind of inhospitable. In fact, I was there, it was 104, and I was coming in about 4 o'clock, and the Border Patrol was just going out with 2 horses. And I was thinking, those horses are not going to like you. But he said, they're still getting over the wall, so we're still going out to cut for sign. I thought, same old lingo of 100 years ago, but they were still going to look for illegals coming over, probably more likely drug runners, because you have to be pretty athletic to get over that wall.
Yeah, I would imagine. Yeah. You have to be pretty athletic to be you going in 104 degrees and riding your bike 7 or 8 miles.
I didn't go very far. The other times I went in, it was more spring. I did find a couple of places that had water, but it's not the brightest thing to do if you really want to get down to it.
We're talking to Dr. Paula Cox, a local dentist who is also an accomplished author, lives right here in the Sandpoint area. Your books are available for sale, and where do people find them?
It's easiest to go to Amazon. You can go to Five Star Publishing and get them directly, but these two are in the library along with the others. I just took Black Sun in a couple of weeks ago. I assume it's on the shelf. I'm not sure, but the others are there if you want to check them out.
And you said there was a trilogy. Is Destiny the first book or the second
one? Destiny's the first. Black Sun is the second. You can see on the cover of Black. I did the artwork on the second
book.
I just
read that in your bio.
I didn't do it on the first one, but that medallion has to do with the story, so that's why I painted that and put it on there. But I did the artwork on the other books, if you see them in the library.
So you can go to the Bonner County Library and you could probably find your books?
Right.
That's great. So what's in the future for Paul Cox?
I'm trying to figure out a plot for another book. I've got one, a manuscript sitting on my table at home. I'm not going to submit it right now. They're still catching up from the COVID backlog at the publisher, and this has to do with that game with Carlisle Indian School and Yale, who happened to be a powerhouse. And the Indians kind of got cheated, but I'm going to use that as the beginning of the story and then go back into one of the things I just say. The Apaches were still raiding in southern Arizona until 1924, which is a real shock.
Wow.
And so this, but anyway, that's why that boot heel is so historically valuable, because it remained primitive for so long. I won't say what kind of Apaches came in. That's in Black Sun. You'll see part of that. But it's well documented that that area was just, wide open up until the 20s, which is a shock.
I didn't know. In fact, a lot of this historical stuff I read in your books, I just wasn't not aware of. And I'm kind of a history buff. So it's great stuff. It's great research that you do. You have a wonderful website, paulacoxauthor.com, so you can see all the books and find out more about them. And I want to hear more. We're out of time right now. But maybe in a couple months when I finish some more of these books, we'll have you back on.
Yeah, we can talk about Black Sun. That's a different kind of ending, but based on a lot of research.
I'm going to start it tonight. That's it for today. And I'm back in here next week. Till then, well, have a great weekend, everybody. I'm Bob Witte, and we'll see you later.
97.1, K246EU, 1450 KBFI, Bonners Ferry, 1400 KSPT Sandpoint, and online at NorthIdahoRadio.com.